piping porridge. Here's to the biscuit tot. Here's to the java flowing like lava out of the coffee pot. Here's to the eggs and bacon. Here's to the waffles unique. And here's three rousing cheers for the best meal of the week. For it's Sunday morning, breakfast time, the time all men adore.
Hi, I'm John Jackson.
And I'm Greg Patent.
And we're the food guys. We've talked and talked and talked about gluten from time to time. The question is, what is gluten? Gluten isn't a single thing. It's a composite.
Gluten really is a network of proteins. It's what gives yeast bread its amazing structure. There's nothing like it. It's what you get when you combine two different molecules. One of them is called glutenin, and the other is called gliadin. They're both high molecular weight proteins, meaning that they have lots of amino acids. It's what holds doughs and batters together, makes muffins tough if you overwork it. The same thing is true with biscuits. It allows crusty French bread to have magnificent holes.
Yes, and still hold up.
While still allowing the bread to hold up.
Yeah,
and glutenin is very different from gliadin and vice versa. Yeah. These two molecules are very different
quite
from different. Each other. Glutenin looks like a long spring, like a coiled
slinky,
spring.
Yeah.
At either end of the spring, it can connect with other glutenin molecules, which allows glutenin to form really long chains that stretch out really far. When you're done stretching, the springs keep most of their springiness, and the dough slides back mostly into the shape it was before you stretched it. This is what's known as glutenin's elastic nature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what makes bread elastic, is glutenin.
Mm-hmm.
Gliadin is a tightly wound ball with sticky points all over it.
Little hooks.
With little hooks.
Yeah.
And the analogy is this. If glutenin were a metal spring like a slinky, then gliadin would be a tennis ball with little rubber hooks every eighth of an inch or so on the tennis ball. And each hook can easily be bent and escaped from. But if you have enough latched onto the spring, it's hard for it to get out. So gliadin latches on with these little hooks onto glutenin.
Yeah.
And as you knead the dough, more and more of these little hooks get caught on the springs of glutenin. And this keeps the gluten together into the shape you put it. Okay. And so this is considered gluten's plastic nature.
Mm-hmm.
So gluten has two different natures, elastic and plastic. And it's also the gliadin that causes dough to become hard to knead after a while.
Mm-hmm.
If you've made any kind of bread dough and you've kneaded it, eventually it becomes recalcitrant.
Yeah.
It won't budge.
As you've all noticed when you started kneading, at first you would knead something and it just reforms, sort of.
Right.
It springs back together
and you can't stretch it out.
No, but eventually you can get it out into the shape that you want it. And it will hold that form only for a little while.
Right. If you get the dough to the point where you can't do anything with it, it's just too rubbery and it's not behaving, leave it alone.
Yeah.
And within about 20 minutes, what happens is that those little gliadin hooks...
The hooks start to release.
They start releasing from the glutenin because the bonds are very weak. They can't maintain their grip forever. And so all the tension from the springs of the glutenin and all of the other gliadin molecules, they're pulling in different directions, will over time cause individual hooks to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a very responsive dough because you're back to the elastic nature of it.
Which turns out to be just about the right amount of time once you've shaped your loaf, so to speak, to pop it in the oven, because once it starts to bake, then all this stops.
Of course, because you're killing the yeast, you're killing everything.
You can get a loaf,
but
the loaf that you put in there is not going to shrink up into that little ball that you started with.
Once the dough is kneaded, of course, it needs to rise.
Yeah.
And that is great because that's through the production of carbon dioxide through the action of the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the elasticity of the glutenin that holds all the air bubbles, keeps them intact. And then when we put the loaf of bread or whatever in the oven, then, of course, the bread continues to rise a little bit because the heat will cause expansion of the bubbles. And then the yeast dies and the bread is set and then we get to eat this wonderful thing.
Yeah. Now, what happens if you don't knead at all?
Well, this is very interesting, John, because it's become the vogue recently in certain artisanal bread books. Artisanal breads in 5 minutes. That's very true. I won't rise in 5 minutes. But if you have a very wet dough, there really is no need to knead it because the glutenin molecules will find each other in a very wet environment. And if you leave the dough to rise for a very good long time with very little yeast, 12 to 18 hours, the structure develops spontaneously. But mm-hmm. it has to be a wet dough.
Very wet.
Yes. And then minimal shaping. Takes minimal shaping. I've also done yeast breads where I don't have to wait 18 hours. But if I make a starter and then I add it and make a wet dough and let it rise only for a half hour and then take the dough out on a floured surface and fold it, redistribute the yeast cells within it and let it rise for another 30 minutes. I do this three or four times. There's a tremendous amount of structure just in that brief 2 hour period. And that's all due to the glutenin molecules spontaneously just hooking up with each other. So no kneading is required of these very wet doughs. And then they rise beautifully. They develop a gorgeous crust. And the only time it takes really is the waiting time.
It's the magic of gluten.
It is the magic of gluten. It is amazingly wonderful stuff.
So now you know. And now you can come back next week for
The Food Guys. Da 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 da